Welcome to the Tawncast. Happy Movember. My name is Josh Wingate, and yes, I did say Movember, and I am your host on this very special day. Did you know that November is Movember?
I didn't know. What does that mean?
And the voice you just heard was the amazing Todd Robert Anderson.
That is me, correct. Yes. Thanks for having me on your show.
Yes, Movember is a very special month. You have to grow a mustache. If you're a man, you have to grow a mustache, and it's supposed to raise awareness for men's health.
Huh.
By not shaving your upper lip.
So does that mean that whoever organized this event considers the epitome of male health to be Tom Selleck?
Yeah, well, that's an obvious...
There's a cat in your studio that's coming up out of a blanket on this futon that you have in your studio.
Can we get a shot of this? Oh, wait.
What's it doing?
It's trying to find a way through the blanket.
Burrowing into the blanket. Oh, perfect. Yeah. Hiding, yeah.
Okay. All right, well, very special day, Movember.
Movember. Well, okay, I can't really grow a mustache, though, because... It gets in the way of booking jobs for me.
It does. Or it could increase your bookage.
My mustache doesn't grow nice like a Stacey Keach or a Tom Selleck or a Tom Skerritt. Mine grows like creepy child molester kind of deal.
There is high demand for that role right now.
Is there? Yeah. Is child molestation very parts big. Really big?
Ever since Sandusky, you know, everybody wants their own child molester on the show.
But they're very popular. Huh, I did not know that.
Yes.
Okay, duly noted. Maybe I'll have to grow that stash.
Do it. Okay.
Book some jobs.
All right. So, Mr. Todd Robert Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think you're like Philip Seymour Hoffman?
Why? Because I have three names?
That's the only reason.
I'm not like Philip Seymour Hoffman at all, unfortunately. I don't have his career, one. Two, he's really good. It's not, you know, there's a, I'm a very conceited, full of myself actor. And a lot of times, you know, I'll look at the successful and go, really? Really? But Philip Seymour Hoffman's not one of those guys. I look at him and go, eh.
Cream of the crop.
Yeah, he's good. Mm-hmm. He's good. Yeah. So I aspire to be that good. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. He was the best part of the movie Twister.
He was. Mm-hmm. But that was back before Philip Seymour Hoffman was a formidable character acting presence.
Mm-hmm.
And he was sort of... like doing the same thing as Jack Black at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Like the funny fat guy in the movies. Like Jack Black was in The Jackal doing that thing, and then he was in Twister doing that thing, playing a stoner guy
and being zany. But then Scent of a Woman.
I don't even remember him in that movie.
Yeah, he was like the snooty prep school guy.
Oh, I forgot about that. I put that movie out of my mind pretty quickly after I saw it.
Because of
the movie.
Hooyah!
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was the beginning of, really the beginning of the Al Pacino over the top part of his career, I would say, which hasn't really gone away.
Is that the. Where he decided that every line should start down low and end up like this.
Yes, yes. That's exactly where it started. And he was doing the hoo-ah thing. Yeah. It started with Scent of a Woman. Mm-hmm. And then they gave him an Academy Award. And now everything is that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Not to say there aren't, you know, a number of post-Scent of a Woman Pacino movies I've enjoyed. Like The Insider and all that. But he was doing that in the Insider.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of ways I thought that movie was great, despite his ludicrousness.
What about, did you see, what is it called? What About Jack, or You Don't Know Jack, or Jack?
Oh, You Don't Know Jack, the Kevorkian HBO. I have not seen that yet, but I do intend to one day see that. I heard he's quite good in that.
I think there's a little bit of redemption.
He did, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. Well, you know, maybe because I kind of feel the same way about De Niro, but in a different way. I don't think De Niro, like, at least Pacino has an immense amount of unfocused energy in his performances as opposed to De Niro, who's, like, just sleepwalking through everything, turning up in supporting roles in straight-to-video 50-cent movies. It's like, dude, what? You do not need any more money. There's no, why are you doing this? But that maybe that David O. Russell movie, you know, what's called The Silver Lining Playbook. Because the clips of him in that, it seems like he's actually playing a character and doing something different. And he has energy and seems to be enjoying himself. So maybe it'll be a return to form. Who knows?
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
Hopefully.
Well, we know he got an award for it at the Hollywood Film Awards.
We did.
So, you know, yeah. If that's any indication.
Mm-hmm. We almost were close enough to smell the cologne.
We weren't anywhere near close enough to smell the cologne, but yeah. I suppose we could have rushed the stage and taken a whiff.
Mm-hmm. That would have been eventful.
Yes, indeed. Just to explain to your audience, yes. we were invited. Our movie, Fuzz Track City, was in the Hollywood Film Festival, which in my personal opinion is the most half-assed film festival that Fuzz Track City has been a part of. But then they have this gala event, which they, what do they call it? The first mandatory stop of award season.
Yeah.
What a jerk off thing to say. Mm-hmm. So we were invited as part of the film festival to go and watch famous people who really had nothing to do with the film festival whatsoever receive awards for movies that have not yet been released. And in Tarantino's case, he's not even done with it.
Right.
You know, I mean, he got a screenplay award. I guess you can give someone for the actual physical writing of a screenplay.
the montage of Tarantino's films, about one line was said.
It was all music, and I was like, yeah. I mean, I remember those movies, too, and a lot of them are quite well written, but you don't get a sense of it in this montage at all.
No.
Mm. Mm-mm. I'm surprised they didn't, like, give someone, like, an award for scoring a film, and then it's just nothing but dialogue. Like, a montage of dialogue. They should have switched it around, and then it would have been a meta comic bit.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't.
No.
No.
Mm-mm.
Anyway, so that's what we mean when we're talking about the Hollywood Film Awards.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's jump on Fuzz Track City.
Mm-hmm.
Fuzz Track City, like you said, has been in some festivals. Actually, it seems like it's been doing well in festivals. It's been traveling around a bit.
Yeah, it's been in 11 or 12 at this point.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's got two more screenings this Saturday.
Mm-hmm. One in the afternoon.
Saturday, November 3rd. Yeah, mm-hmm. One in the afternoon in Santa Monica and one at night at 10 o'clock, I think, in Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
And then a week from this Saturday, it's up in the Bay Area.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Are you going?
Yeah, they actually are flying Steve Hicks, the director, and me up to do Q&A.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, they're paying for the ticket, so I was like, yeah,
that's
go.
That's great.
I mean, they wanted Dee Wallace to go, but she's in Bulgaria, so they're stuck with me.
Well, you know, they got the better looking one.
Yeah, that's
true.
I'm
kidding, D.
Like, she'll ever listen to this.
So, well, you can get tickets. I think you can get tickets if you go to the Lemley. Am I correct? The Lemley website in Beverly Hills. You can get tickets to go Saturday night.
I suppose.
I think you can.
I don't remember the details.
And I think you can...
If you look up Fuzz Track City on Facebook, all the details are there.
Facebook, what's that?
Facebook is a social media site thing.
Like MySpace?
Sure, yeah. It's the next level of MySpace.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Yes, go to Facebook, look up Fuzz Track City. Go see it. Yours truly is a wannabe beatboxing thug.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm supporting Mr. Todd Robert Anderson, the sexy male lead. He takes his shirt off a lot, and it's hot.
It's not hot at all, but okay. My shirt is off in one scene. I remember I showed, when my parents were in town, and I had not the final cut, but like the last, you know, cut before the picture lock on video. So I showed it to them. They were taken aback by these things.
But my shirt.
A lot of the stuff that I do in the movie, they weren't happy about watching me do. I think it's kind of different when it's your kid, I guess. And you don't really, like, they're not big movie people, and they don't, they've never really understood my fascination with the movies, so they don't really, and my dad said to me, and he's a super smart guy, but he said to me so many times, I don't understand your business, and I don't understand what you do at all. I don't get it. So to be parents watching your kid shirtless in a bed with Dee Wallace, it was, yeah. And then he actually said, oh, God, I told you never to do nude scenes. That's what he said.
Yeah, well, I've been doing this like 10 years, and I still don't get it.
It doesn't make any sense.
There is no rhyme or reason to any of it.
No, it makes no sense. Yeah. You're right.
But I would do a nude scene with Dee Wallace.
Yeah, I mean, I was pushing. I really wanted, because Hicks had in the script originally, there was this sequence, you know, when in that scene where she's talking me into being calm, you know, and in that sequence he had written a fantasy where we're actually having sex in the back of Mitchell, the car, while it's moving in this fantasy sequence, and he was going to get a green screen and do it that way. But he ultimately decided, you know, one, he didn't have time, two, it was too expensive, and three, it was completely unnecessary. But I kept saying, I really think we should do the sex scene. I really think, you know, because I really wanted to make out with Dee Wallace. As it stands, it was just suggested. There's no, you know, on-screen actual making out. I didn't get to make out with anybody.
I would have done it. Made out with you.
Oh, well, that's sweet. Yeah. I mean, that would have been cool.
There's the sequel.
There's
the sequel.
It's the love affair with
War Machine
and Murphy Dunn. Yeah, sure. Why not?
It works. You need another partner. And, you know, your partner died, and War Machine kind of just had an epiphany in the film. He realized he's a nice guy.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Instead of Black and Dunn, it will be War Machine and Dunn.
Or would you use your real name? The character, I mean.
Like William?
Yeah. William and Dunn?
William and Dunn.
Or Dunn and William?
It could work.
Dunn-William?
William Dunn. Dunn-William.
I think Dunn has to be first, because I'm the experienced private eye. Yeah. You'd just be sort of a, you know.
The guy.
Apprentice.
Yeah.
You'd be the apprentice. You'd have to do a lot of shit jobs to start. Like, really, you'd be taking a lot of pictures of people having an affair while I do the more important stuff.
Which is fine.
You're good with that?
Yeah.
It's a good place to start.
Sure.
The pay's not great, but, you know, eventually you can get your own license and start your own business.
Probably better than the acting thing. Probably make more money.
Well, yeah, probably. Yeah. I've actually thought about that.
Being a private eye.
Yeah, well, you know, I considered like going to private detective school and learning how to do that, so I could, because it seemed like, you know, if you're a private eye, you make your own hours, so you can bust out to auditions. You know,
this is true.
And no one would really know. As long as you're, you know, producing the photos. Because mostly in real life, that's what PIs do, is take pictures of spouses having affairs, right?
I don't know. I just saw it on TV.
It's not like glamorous like Magnum at all. No. It's
So I can't wear short shorts and a mustache?
Well, you can wear whatever you want.
Oh.
But I would recommend, if you're on stakeouts, to not be that flashy. You kind of want to blend into the background so people don't get suspicious.
It is Hollywood.
That's true.
Kind of like dress and drag, and no one would care.
Yeah, that's a good point.
With the mustache.
Yeah. Yeah, you make a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, go ahead. Dress like Magnum.
in drag. So dress like Magnum in drag.
You're Magnum in a dress, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice Hawaiian dress.
That works.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good call.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck with it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Second career.
There you go.
Starting right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to see. I'm not going to say anything because then I'll look like an idiot if nobody responded. So now I do have to say.
Yeah, now you have to explain what you're doing because now it's just confusing.
Because there's no cameras or anything. Mm-mm. I don't like this.
You prefer on camera. Why don't you do your show on camera then? Why are you doing it just as an audio thing?
I don't know. Because I have pimples today. So I went to the Twitterverse and I said, hey, you know, I'm doing this podcast with this guy, Todd Robert Aronson, sexy man. People know us, you know, five people on Twitter. And I'm like, hey, send me a question. I'll ask Todd. Nobody responded.
Sent a question. Yeah. No. It's tough.
More important things in the world right now.
Do you have a lot of followers?
I have a couple.
How many? What are you at?
Let me see. 570.
You have 570 followers.
Yes.
That's good.
Is it?
Yeah, I mean, I only have like 300.
Oh, okay.
But you were on some kind of soap opera.
I was, and...
And are a lot of those people fans of the soap opera?
I think so, yeah.
I didn't...
Speaking of pedophilia...
What about pedophilia?
Oh, well, my character, you know, raped a younger man in the prison.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I didn't see it. I don't watch soap operas. I didn't even know they still made soap operas. I thought they gave that up.
They're on their way out, unfortunately.
They've been on their way out for years, though.
Right, but they're more on their way out.
They're even more on their way out than before.
Mm-hmm. I think there's only like 3 or 4.
What do you think will replace soap operas in daytime TV? Just like
talk shows,
reality shows, internet clip shows. Mm-hmm. Here's people getting hit in the balls.
Yeah. Tosh.0.
Do you think the reason why they're on their way out is much of their demographic is older and they never captured a younger audience to take their place?
You'd be surprised. There is a pretty strong younger audience.
But yeah?
What happens is I think they record them and watch them later. And but I think probably production costs.
It's not cost effective.
Right, I think it's probably easier just to have a talk show that people go and watch, and if they watch it at all, and if they don't, it's not that much money, and I think more room for advertisement in talk shows, and you could...
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But then why isn't, like, primetime scripted television on its way out?
Well, unfortunately... The dramas are kind of fewer and further between. Right now, it's like the year of the sitcom, which is the...
Well, that's on network TV, but I would say on cable TV, the hour-long drama is flourishing. I mean,
true.
Yeah. I mean, they don't spend as much money as the networks, but they get great talent, you know?
Because are people who still care about great art.
Right. Yeah. Well, or just good storytelling, you know? I mean, it's like Breaking Bad. I only watch the stuff that's on Netflix streaming, granted, but I'm consistently amazed at how good that show has been.
It's fantastic. I think it might be one of my favorite shows. And that network, AMC, is, I think, they're the...
Well, and then
They're up here.
And FX, I think, is really good, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have a lot of sitcoms, but their sitcoms are really funny, like Louie.
Well, the FX seemed to be the pioneer of the whole basic cable station. They with the Shield.
Yeah, absolutely. The Shield and all that.
Justified, Sons of Anarchy.
Justified's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Great show.
When are you on that show?
Hmm?
When are you going to be on that show?
I did season one.
Oh, were you on season one?
Mm-hmm.
Who were you in season one?
This meth-making guy named Puller. I did a couple episodes. And got shot in the back of the head.
Well, we had already... done Fuzz Track. I must have gone. That was Josh. I've just forgotten.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We got another Fuzz Track City alum on Justified this coming season.
She's been on, I think, the last two.
Abby's been on most of the seasons. But I mean, Dave Florek.
Is he on it this season?
Yeah, he told me he did an episode or two or something like that.
Yeah. They're really good with their recurrings and their guest stars. And
yeah.
I just wish they didn't kill me. Bring me back to life.
Yeah.
Because Abby Miller, another Fuzz Track City alum, she's She's doing great on there. She's
well, and she's nearly died. Her character's nearly been killed like 27 times on that show.
She's the immortal prostitute.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah.
This year she has a cast chair. She tweeted a picture of her cast chair.
Wow.
So that means, I mean, it doesn't seem like they're going to kill her off too soon.
No, they really like Abby.
Yeah,
yeah, that's good. Because every time I'm on shows, it becomes clear that nobody really likes me, and they try to write me off as quickly as possible. Mm.
I can see that.
It's understandable. I'm very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And I yell at people and make them feel bad. But, you know, it's like, if you don't do that, how are people going to remember you?
Exactly.
If you're nice and professional and you remember your lines and you nail everything in a take or two, you're immediately forgotten. But if you fumble, you yell, you blame people.
Well, I mean, what would Christian Bale be without the recorded blow-up?
Yeah, if he hadn't blown up on that Batman movie, people would have instantly forgotten about Christian Bale.
Never mind the great performance, you know.
Yeah. I'm Batman. 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 Did you see that last Batman movie?
Not yet. My wife wouldn't let us go see it because she didn't want the tragedy to sink in, you know, with the whole...
Oh, yeah. A lot of people had that issue, and then or they would go and just not really be able to enjoy the movie because they were worried about it. Yeah, I saw it after that event. I mean, I didn't really have that, but I guess there was a fleeting thought here or there when the movie got really slow, which is a lot of it was kind of slow.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that about it that, like, one of those little details where I was like, what? Why? Because, you know, he has, like, when he's Bruce Wayne, when Christian Bale is Bruce Wayne, he just talks normal. Mm-hmm. But when he's got the suit on, he has that affected Batman voice. Which is fine and dandy, although sometimes hard to understand.
Mm-hmm.
But in one like scene, he's like talking to Catwoman, and then she leaves, and he says something. There's nobody else there, and he says something to himself, but he uses the Batman voice to talk to himself. And that I was like, why would he do that? I mean, I mean,
character.
He just can't get out of character when the suit's on. He's always okay.
Bruce Wayne is a character actor. And, you know, when he's in costume,
he can't. Character. He's method. He's very method. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's a good explanation. Mm-hmm. I'll accept that. Mm-hmm. I'll accept that.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about method.
Method acting. Okay, sure.
Because from what we have out there now, there's a few method actors that I think are fantastic. Daniel Day-Lewis, for one. He's kind of he's the big... He's the poster boy for method acting right now.
Yeah, when he's not, cobbling.
Mm-hmm.
He comes out of his cobbler shop every few years and turns in interesting performances. Yeah, certainly, he is. He's very good.
Yeah, he's great. I'm looking forward to Lincoln.
I'm not going to go because there's no vampires in this one.
No.
I thought it was part of a franchise, and it's just about Lincoln, and that seems...
No.
Doesn't seem as interesting. I mean, no. I think history is not interesting unless you throw in supernatural creatures.
They could have at least done a werewolf or two.
Yeah, something.
Yeah.
Give us something. Yeah.
I mean, Spielberg, come on.
Come on. It's Spielberg, too. Yeah. I mean, he's, you know, all about action fantasy shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Amistad and Saving Private. Schindler's List, stuff like that. Those things are crazy. Why not do one of those? Mm-hmm. You know.
Well,
Abraham Lincoln and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. There's your movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's your movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, have you ever worked with an actor like Daniel Day, who's on set, completely in character, doesn't break?
Not really. Mm-hmm. When we did Fuzz Track City, you spoke in your British accent for a number of days before we were talking, and then we were just relating, and then you just stopped. And I was like, You're not really British. And you're like, no, I'm from Boston. It's like, oh, I'm from Boston. So that's kind of the closest, I think. Because most of what I do is, you know, commercials and stuff. and, you know, guests on procedurals and all that. And I've never encountered that where somebody's never out of character. Mm-hmm. I haven't. Or maybe I have and I just didn't realize it, mm-hmm. you know. Certainly have dealt with a lot of actors who are crazy, mm-hmm. but I don't know if that was that they're in character. I think it's just that they were crazy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't really know. I don't know. What about you? Have you?
No, I've tried to, on my a recent film I just did, try to do the best to stay in character, to really... You know, you were the lead. You were the lead of Fuzz Track City. It's a lot of pressure. You know,
yeah.
You're in on almost every scene and carrying the film.
Yeah.
You know, so it's... And so I've gained a lot of respect for people like Daniel Day-Lewis, Joaquin Phoenix apparently does the same similar things. Christian Bale does similar things.
Yeah.
Because it's a challenge. I think it's a challenge.
It is a challenge to stay focused. I definitely agree. I think personally, though, if I did that, I would become entirely too exhausted. Mm-hmm. If I don't know. I get it, mm-hmm. and I respect it. And if that's what somebody does, you know, I'm a good collaborator, I guess, with actors. You know, I mean, it's like I'm not necessarily the kind of guy who, before a commercial audition, wants to go over the friggin' dialogue before we go in. But if somebody's like, hey, do you mind if we run this, I'll say yeah, sure. If they say, do you want to, I'll say no. But it, you know, if someone's in character, I'll be cool with that, play along. But I don't know, for me it's like I like to leave the character alone when I'm going to the craft service table. Mm-hmm. You know, because that's the other thing, if I'm in character all the time, it just seems weird, because it would take me out of, like, when you're on set and the cameras are rolling and you engulf yourself in the world, mm-hmm. Then once they call cut and you leave, and then you're in the parking lot surrounded by production trailers and you're still in that just feels weird to me. Mm-hmm. For me, it's like I like to actually compartmentalize those mm-hmm. things, you know. But, you know, that's me. Not exactly the most brilliant actor of all time, so maybe...
Second.
I'm second or third best. But, yeah. I mean, but I don't have... Maybe some people... I don't know. It's also, you know, the kind of parts I play and the stuff that I get is different. You know, if I was... You know, Joaquin Phoenix's character in The Master, maybe I would have been more compelled to stay in that place, because it would, you know, maybe it's harder to get there instantly. But I mean, I think a lot of great actors are, as soon as they call cut, their character's gone, mm-hmm. and then as soon as, you know, they call action, they're back
yes.
in the world,
mm-hmm. and great, really talented.
Yeah. So yeah, absolutely. So I think it's, you know, everybody works their own way, as mm-hmm. long as, you know, you get there. I mean, and even if you're in character all the time, that doesn't necessarily mean you're not going to have a bad take.
No, it's true.
You know, mm-hmm. it's an imperfect thing. But, you know, whatever floats your boat, man. Mm-hmm. If you want to stay in character all the time, I respect it. I may not, like, hang out and chat, though, because it makes me feel awkward when people are... It's like, I know you're not this guy. I know who you are, mm-hmm. you know? So, if that's what you want to do, maybe go talk to some other people, because it makes me uncomfortable.
Note to self. On yeah. our next, on the Fuzz Track City 2, mm-hmm. William and Dunn and William, don't talk to you.
whilst in character, while cameras are not rolling. Well, you mm-hmm. can certainly talk to me, and I will be polite, but it may make me uncomfortable. I don't know.
Note to self, definitely... make Todd uncomfortable. And don't ever ask him if he wants something. Use the phrasing, do you mind? Because then he'll say, sure. Okay. That's just a note. I'm going to record that from this podcast.
For me, it's all about phrasing and yeah. semantics. You have to be very careful.
It makes sense. It makes
yeah.
sense.
Yeah.
Let's go back to Twitter. See if anybody's actually there.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of people on Twitter, but they probably don't have any questions for me.
or they don't care about my tweet. But hey, you know, I get it. There's a lot of people that have more important things to care about.
Well, like, and there are a lot of podcasts with people who are actually famous.
Who? Who's more famous in the whole entire Twitterverse than Todd Robert Anderson?
I don't know, but I'm sure it's a big world out there, man. So I don't know for sure, but
like Lady Gaga?
Sure, Lady Gaga. Okay. Well, I have friends who do podcasts, and they get like character actors and stuff in to interview. And they like did Tony Todd the other day. Mm-hmm. But whenever they tweet, hey, do you have questions? But part of it is one of the hosts is she's like a fanboy favorite from Buffy. Mm. So she's got a lot of followers. So when she tweets that, hey, I'm interviewing this horror icon, Tony Todd, they interviewed Tony Todd last week. They get a lot of questions.
So all you're doing is making me feel more like a loser.
I apologize.
That's okay.
I apologize. That's well, you right. just haven't. You know, once this movie's out, it's all going to change.
Yeah, you know, it's gonna. It's just gonna be crazy.
What's the name of your movie that you're in the lead?
Oh, that movie.
Yeah.
Oh, Inverse.
Inverse, and what happens? Inverse is a basketball shoe.
What?
Isn't that what it is? No. A brand name for some kind of basketball shoe?
Yeah, sure. No. It's a cool sci-fi psychological thriller.
Psychological?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? I mean, that's a lot of marketing jargon you just threw at me, but what is the movie about? I mean, what's an inverse? It's like a universe that's turned inside out? Is that what's happening?
That's the kind of the through line. Basically, imagine a man.
A man. Uh-huh.
Two eyes, nose, mouth. Uh-huh. Wakes up, seemingly from his own death, to find out that everything and anything is not what it seems, including himself.
And
I'm not really allowed to say much more. It's a hard pitch.
Yeah, you don't want to...
But it's cool.
It sounds sort of thematically similar to... that like Dark City movie? Did you ever see Dark City?
Mm-mm. But there's a lot of stuff coming out now with the whole parallel universe theories and
You got Fringe.
Fringe, and that there was a great movie called Another Earth.
Seen that. I heard that was really good.
It's really cool. So if you see that, Another Earth meets Memento.
It's told backwards?
Not necessarily. But it's in but that
the,
vein.
I see.
This guy's
like Inception-y,
trying to figure things out.
I see. Well, that's sort of what Dark City was. Mm-hmm. I like Dark City a lot. That's Alex Proyas, the guy who directed The Crow. I don't know how to pronounce his name. But Dark City was it was Rufus Sewell. You know that dude?
I think you yawned at the same time.
Rufus Sewell. But he's like Rufus a guy. Sewell. And that's another one. It's like, well, you know what? This movie's 10 fucking years old. So if you haven't seen it by now, you know, I won't spoil all the things for you, but it's basically about, you know, this guy who, starts realizing things are weird and in his world, and one of the things that he realizes is he starts asking people, when was the last time you remember the sun being out? Seems like it's night all the time, and everybody has fuzzy memories of different things. And he's got like memories of being at this place called Shell Beach when he's a child, and he starts like trying to find Shell Beach, and everybody knows about Shell Beach,
but
they can't. He's like, how do you get to Shell Beach? And it's like, oh, that's easy. You get on the express train, and it's just the last stop on the express train. But every time he goes in the subway to get on the express train doesn't stop. It never stops because it's the express train. Mm-hmm. So that's, and all the express trains say Shell Beach on them, but they never stop. And he's like, which stops? Where does the express train stop? And they're like, I can't remember. I think it's, you know, this street or whatever. So the more he uncovers, the more he realizes there's, you know, basically alien beings fucking with him and everybody else. But it's a cool movie.
Dark City.
Dark City.
I'm making a note.
Yeah.
Note to self.
I'm just saying, if you're in a movie called Inverse, you might enjoy watching something called Dark City.
I think I will. I like that stuff.
Inverse is not, you're not quite done with the post on it?
No, we're still there. We did submit a cut to Sundance.
And did they accept, did Sundance say yes?
Well, I think they get announced next month, December, the announcements. But we have our fingers crossed and high hopes for it. But we are distributed. We're getting a distribution deal.
Oh, you already have a distributor.
We do. And
who's that? And what is it? What kind of?
It's Freestyle Distribution. Freestyle Films. They're the people that used to be New Line Cinema.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they're we're doing premiere in Boston. Oh yeah, Boston connection. Nice. So that's pretty serendipitous. And then we're gonna do New York, L.A., and a couple other markets. But we're hoping to hit Sundance first.
Get that buzz, mm-hmm. and then maybe with that, and then maybe it'll roll out to a wide. I mean, are you hoping for a wider release, or you just want to get the screenings and then get it on the video or multi-platform? I mean, is that what they're doing with it? Like when you're having screenings, they're also going to have video on demand, or are they keeping it theatrical? Because a lot of smaller movies now, especially high concept smaller movies, tend to get, you know, in sci-fi and horror, they tend to get like a limited release in, you know, a few cities, mm-hmm. And then simultaneously that you can get a video on demand.
Right, and you pay.
I've actually seen a lot of cool movies that way without driving over the hill and going to the theater, just looking at them on my TV.
That's true, and I actually go to those when I'm on demand. I go, "What's in theaters now?" And I kind of scroll through and check it out.
And see what's up.
I saw a Joaquin Phoenix film that way.
Which one?
I think it was called Two Lovers.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's pretty good. Gwyneth Paltrow and stuff like that. Yeah. So, yeah, I would imagine that probably be something they would do.
Yeah, yeah.
That makes sense.
Well, if it comes to video on demand, I'll certainly look at it.
You're not going to come to a screening?
I will.
Even if I send you
I will, if I'm available.
A fancy envelope with one says it's your ticket, one says you must bring this, and if you don't bring one of them, I'm going to make you drive home.
What Toncast host Josh is referencing is when we went to the Hollywood Film Awards the other week, our director, they give you like this package of crap and there's like one thing that I guess it looks like an invite, right? It looks like an invite. And it says all the information and, you know, enjoy the Hollywood Film Awards. But then there was a separate piece of paper that was an actual ticket into the Hollywood Film Awards. And he grabbed the invite thinking it was the ticket and not the actual ticket. And when he got there, they wouldn't let him in. And then the lady at the door said, "Just go to the hospitality table. They'll take care of you." So we went to that, and they looked up his name in a list, and they found his fucking name, and then said, "Yeah, but we still can't let you in without the ticket." And he was like, "Okay." So then he had to turn around and drive home at rush hour, back to the valley, get his ticket, go back over the hill to the Beverly Hilton.
One of the best parts was dinner.
It was the best part, was the dinner. It was delectable. Mm-hmm. But I felt bad for that dude. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the, like, you know, he digs stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I'm not an awards show guy on any level. I was certainly curious to see what it was like that kind of event was like in person. But for me, it was ultimately no different than watching it on TV, mm-hmm. except I got like a fancy dinner out of it. Mm-hmm. It was actually worse than TV, because if I wanted to, you know, get antsy, I had to excuse myself to go to the bathroom and then just go stand in the stall and look at my phone and tweet. Because when it's on TV, you can just do that while you're sitting there, mm-hmm. and you don't look like a jerk. But yeah, I felt, because he, you know, he digs stuff like that. Mm-hmm. He likes the Hollywood glam and all that.
See, I dug it on a different level. Like I get inspired to do great work like some of those people.
And yeah, I mean,
Pierce.
I get it, and I think that's why a lot of people like award shows, is sort of dreaming of, living vicariously through celebrities. But for me, it just becomes frustrating. It would be different if the turnaround of celebrities was different every year. Mm. But, I mean, you look at this award show, and they're honoring Dustin Hoffman, Robert De Niro, Judd Apatow, Quentin Tarantino, even Amy Adams has, like, been an award show staple for, like, 5 or 6 years mm-hmm. at least now. And it's just when it's the same people as opposed to a celebration of newer people, or I mean, we were there for as part of, you know, a film festival, and they didn't even mention a single one of the movies. They didn't
at least mention the winning film, right? They didn't even mention that.
No, they mentioned nothing. We didn't get a shout out. There was nothing. And if they took the time to do a musical montage of Tarantino movies, I can't understand why they couldn't have taken the time to do some kind of montage of the movies that. And that actually would have been a cool thing to do. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't televised or anything, so it's not like they were taking it. But if you just did like a 5-6 minute highlight reel from the movies and the thing, then all those famous people and the powerful people who were sitting there patting the backs of celebrities, maybe they would have gone, oh, wow, that... I want to look at that.
Yeah.
And then that could have fueled a new career, as opposed to just keeping the I certainly don't have a problem with honoring these people but when it's the same people all the time, it starts to feel a little suspect to me. I mean, that's just kind of the state of the country. There's the top 2% and then everybody else. And I what I don't understand is why we, the 99%ers, continue to celebrate these wealthy people who remain wealthy and powerful, and certainly in Hollywood you just see the same faces over and over again. And I know there's like a branding thing, and I guess in a weird way I just don't relate to it, because I don't go to movies just because so-and-so is involved, like a few exceptions. Like, I'll pretty much see any, but that's not even true, because I wouldn't necessarily just go to a Kurt Russell movie if it was like a romantic comedy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if he's in anything action-y or, you know, whatever, I'm going to go, because I love Kurt Russell. But there's so few people who, and as much as a lot of those people whose work I've loved and looked up to and movies that have blown me away, I don't go to movies just because Robert De Niro is in it. Mm-hmm. So I don't relate to that sort of thing, but I'm not saying you don't honor those people, but maybe pepper in some people that we haven't seen at right. every awards thing.
Well, there was a nice gem where they honored, he's kind of growing now, but John Hawkes, that was pretty
cool. Yeah, no, I mean, and John, that's totally cool. And John is, for the last number of years, has turned in amazing performances mm-hmm. in these indie movies, and all of which have been honored. I mean, was it Winter's Bone or Martha May?
Winter's Bone, he was nominated for Best Actor.
And wasn't that movie nominated for Best Movie, or was that Marcy, Martha, May, Marlene, Mars, whatever it was called?
I don't know.
But he's been around. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, John's great, and I was in a movie with John. I got to work with him a long time ago.
The little things like that, I think that was cool.
Yeah, and the little girl from Beasts of the Southern Wild, you know, that was cool. But, I mean, that was, like, peppered in. Mm-hmm. And Beasts of the Southern Wild notwithstanding, I mean, John has been around, and, you know, and I don't mind that, because he's still sort of, it seems like he's sort of on the rise of getting known. But when it's just one guy, you know, at least half should be sort of a new introduction to people you haven't seen before.
To go back to your point about the film festival and the films that were in it, I mean, it's no easy task to get into a film festival.
No.
I know several friends of mine that are filmmakers, and they bust their ass, and they make good films, mm-hmm. and they can't see the light of day.
They can't get into festivals.
So it's
arbitrary.
Right, and so when a film like, especially Fuzz Track City, not just because I'm in it, but that a film like that, Quentin Tarantino would love that film.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I feel like all those different, like,
you know, you got all these, you got the Weinsteins there, or at least one of them was there, and then you have people like Tarantino, who Tarantino does a lot of producing and presenting of things, and, you know, David O. Russell's a formidable presence now and can probably, you know, help other people. And if they had just shown clips of the movie, something might have caught somebody's eye, and then they would have been like, hey, you know, get me in touch with whoever made that movie. So, I don't know. I found that element of it all frustrating. And that, to me, is sort of, you know, what's frustrating about just the awards thing every year in general. That's what I'm saying. It seems like we're just cycling through the same people and honoring the same people year after year after year. And also it's, you know, and I enjoy Bradley Cooper and all that, but he's gorgeous. So it seems like if you look at the older people they were honoring is from a very distinct time, which is the 70s. That's where they had all these breakout, amazing artistic... And I don't think Hoffman, even De Niro, even Pacino would have the same career if they came up now. Because they give all those lead parts to intensely gorgeous people. Maybe that's part of the reason they get honored again and again, because there is no kind of new crop, with the exception of John Hawks, maybe.
Yeah.
There's no, like, crop, really, of actors who are pushing the envelope and doing weird things and doing interesting things and doing harder-edge things.
There's a handful. Even if you look at Ryan Gosling, though, if he wasn't so good-looking...
Yeah,
he might not be getting those roles and able to put himself in those independent films where he is doing fantastic work.
Yeah, and makes cool. But he's a gorgeous guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's the first thing you hear about when you talk to, you know, hey, did you see Drive? And it's, oh yeah, Gosling is so gorgeous. Mm-hmm. You know, as opposed to, you know, this performance. It's like, they fall in love with maybe his work after they fall in love with his abs versus, you know, someone like Hoffman, who's doesn't look like a leading man, who became, at least had a run where he was a sex symbol just because he was turning in great work.
Well, yeah, the story of The Graduate, they wanted Robert Redford.
Yeah.
And then they come up with this short little Jewish guy and he blows it away, but they're like, we can't do this. We need blonde and blue
gorgeous.
Eyes.
Yeah, which is a classic problem in Hollywood. But you'd think, like, after the 70s especially, and the fact that we still celebrate the stars of the 70s and the movies of the 70s, and that's always, like, a reference point for greatness, that's not what they produce anymore. Mm-hmm. They just don't.
The hope is still there. And there are some great independent films that actually...
Absolutely.
But they're not the ones getting the highlight. Like The Graduate... Everybody knows Graduate.
Right.
You know, everybody knows Taxi Driver.
Yeah, but those kind of movies, or Mean Streets, but yeah. Yeah, and I think a lot of people who were at the film festival itself, I mean, those movies, are, for the most part, are shoestring. You want to talk about a weird class system. There's, as far as artistic vision goes, there's so few people who get, like, the kind of financial backing that it takes to, you know, like a multi-million dollar movie as opposed to, $100,000 or $200,000, that there's a wealth of difference there. And it's just too bad that so many of these young filmmakers do these shoestring budget movies and they get nothing out of their investment because... you know, most of the money is controlled by the studio system. I mean, a lot of what's considered independent, you know, you see like Warner Independent and Fox Searchlight Pictures and that's not really independent. They're just low-budget studio movies that they're going, hey, it's an indie and we'll put it in an art house and it'll get awards. And it's sort of like, well, but what about all the shoestringers, you know, who actually turn in interesting movies, well-made movies, despite...
And take money out of their own pocket.
Difficulty of actually producing, you know, a good piece of entertainment that's actually entertaining with that little money is more of a, to me, is more of an accomplishment than if you have, you know, a $5 million movie. And not that that's not an accomplishment, but it's just, I don't know, it's weird that major swath of difference is just, it's frustrating.
But We still fight the fight.
We fight the fight.
Yeah. We fight the fight, and we still have the hope, and the dream's still alive, you know? I mean, yeah. Films like Another Earth, that did really well at Sundance, and from her perspective, the lead, she wrote that, and she wrote another film, was in Sundance the same year. She acted in both, and now her career's blowing up, and, you know, you look at people like John Hawks, yeah, he's been doing it almost 30 years, but... He's fighting the fight, and he's finally getting recognized.
Yeah, he's finally getting recognized. I just, you know, that's the sort of funny thing for me is that, when you're talking about fighting the fight and getting recognized and your career is blowing up, I guess it just feels like there's, like, such a concentration of wealth that we're just trying to get into that inner circle. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's what your career blowing up is, and I just kind of wish the wealth was spread out, you know, more so it wasn't... so ridiculous. It's so rare for people to break through because I really do think there are a lot of great artists who just go completely unrecognized for their entire lives. And I think that's a drag.
And it's unfortunate because a lot of the talent they'll just put it aside and because they're forced to go do something else.
They have no choice. They gave their shot and they got ignored and then they go work at the family hardware store or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's my main thing. I kind of just wish the wealth was spread out a little bit more, so there were more opportunities for people who were unknown artists.
Well, hopefully, you know, we keep the hope alive, and people like Steve Hicks, writer director of Fuzz Track City,
yeah,
passionate. Man,
yeah, he's talented and driven, and he deserves recognition. I mean, because he was so excited to go to that award show because so many people that he looks up to were there. Mm-hmm. You know, Tarantino being a great example. So it would have been nice if somehow, you know, his work had crossed the consciousness of somebody that he loved so much, as opposed to just being a guy sitting at a table in the back of the room watching his hero get an award and then disappear into the night. That's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, but we're still fighting the fight.
Yeah, we are still fighting the fight.
And you know, and there must be some hope in that head of yours over there.
There certainly is hope. Yeah, yeah. Well, there's hope because I know I'm not the only one who feels this way. And, you know, if once the right person gets that, I mean, It's hard to know what it's like once you're part of the system, as it were. Mm-hmm. But hopefully, you know, enough people will get to the, or at least one person will get to that point and kind of be revolutionary in changing the landscape. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, as Tarantino did, you know, back in the 90s when he changed the landscape and a lot of independent filmmakers, you know, got their stuff to see the light of day because of it. I guess the only problem I had there is it seemed like a lot of independent filmmakers thought, well, all I have to do is ape the Tarantino thing as opposed to just doing their own thing and letting the indie explosion have a feeling of variety. It would just be everything was like a crime thriller 2 days in the
valley. Well, that still happens in the studio system now.
Well, yeah.
You know, young, what's the criteria now for sitcom? Young 30-something with geeky, cute friends.
Right, right. Yeah, that's absolutely true. So. There's trending. I guess I also get aggravated when indie filmmakers, they just try to jump onto a trend as opposed I guess that's how it works. I mean, you something successful, and then that's what the money people want, and then everybody's just trying to kowtow to the money people. I don't know. As opposed to, I mean, because you look at the business model, the simple business model of the 70s actually made a lot of sense because they didn't want to pour $100 million or I'm adjusting for inflation, but they didn't want to pour a bazillion dollars into one movie because they didn't know what was working anymore. Mm-hmm. So they broke it up you know, and made a bunch of small movies, and some of them blew up and became, you know, not just financially successful, but classic films. But even if you look at the movies that didn't become that, some of them are very, even if they don't necessarily succeed 100%, they're super interesting failures versus what you see now, which is, you know, a $60, $70 million snooze fest, like Green Lantern or whatever. And it's like, but you could have made, you know, seven $10 million movies, you know, or $14, $5 million movies. And even if one of those had had financial success, you would have made your money back. And if two of them were hits, then you're rolling in dough. And if you use that business model, then, you know, you... I don't know. It just seems to make more sense than putting all your eggs in one basket and being like, oh, crap, we took such a bath. God, I hope this other $200 million movie does better. It doesn't – I mean, it's just – it doesn't make any sense. It does not make financial sense.
Studios, are you listening?
Listen to me, studios.
To Todd Robert Anderson.
You will avoid things like Battleship and Poseidon if you just listen to me.
Oh, poor. What was that actor's name that was in the lead of that and also in that?
Taylor Kitsch.
Oh, yeah.
He was he was John Carter, lead of Battleship. And then he was the lead, one of the two leads in the Oliver Stone Savages movie. And that didn't do well either. Right. Yeah. And it's like, I don't blame him, but this is the kind of thing that kills an actor. I mean, if you have three major, two major tentpole bombs and then, reputed director's return to his sort of old wheelhouse of, you know, action crime stuff, and it all fails. Oh, dude, that's so unlucky, man. I feel kind of bad for that guy because he's not, you know, he's not great, but he's in any of those. But he's also not horrible. He's no worse than anybody else.
No,
and it's just bad. It's just bad luck, man. Although, you know, he probably should have had a different manager. Because anybody, like, looking at John Carter, nobody knows, except for sci-fi geeks, nobody knows who John Carter is. I mean, and in literature, he's the inspiration for so much of the stuff that we see. But it's also, like, nobody knows who John Carter is.
I didn't know
him. Yeah, and it's, yeah. And then something based on a board game. It's just
from when was Battleship out in the
50s? But yeah, it was created back when there were actual battleships. They don't use battleships anymore. That's why I don't know if you saw the movie, but they shoehorn an actual battleship into the third act, and just because all the other boats have blown up, so they're like, well, it's a museum, a floating museum. So
did anybody say you sunk my battleship?
No, that's nobody.
That's the whole point of the film.
I don't remember, but I don't remember seeing that. Although there were a lot of moments in that movie where I was thinking about other things, so it's very possible somebody did and I missed it. But I don't think so. I don't think so. Okay. Yeah. I don't know what else to tell you about that.
Okay. Well, Saturday, come out.
Yes.
Santa Monica, 2:45-ish. Ishnish.
It's 2:55 on 3rd Street Promenade, one of those theaters there, right?
Yep. And then there is Saturday night at Beverly Hills, Lemley. You can come see the famous Todd Robert Anderson, D. Wallace. Amazing film. I like it a lot.
I like it a lot, too.
I think it's a really good film. I've seen it a few times. It's funny. It has compassion, it has passion, and it has a hilarious, hilarious performance by this one guy named Josh Adel, one of the producers. I think he's a standout in that film.
Yeah, he's good.
It's worth seeing it. It's worth seeing Todd navigate through the sea of crazy characters. It's a great film, so please go check it out. Again, you can check out Fuzz Track City on Facebook. Fuzz with two Z's.
Two Z's.
Two Z's.
That's it. There aren't three. There isn't one. It's two.
And there's some great music, awesome direction, editing. It's the works.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I look forward to seeing Inverse down the road.
You better.
I'm excited.
You better. And I'm sending you like 3 invites. If you don't bring the right one, I'm sending you.
But I'll miss the first half of the movie.
That's okay. I'll give you a DVD.
All right.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks, guys. Yay. Hey, Twitter. What happened? No questions. You're fired.
Twitter's fired.
Yes.
Twitter.